Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It's glad to be back with you as we are continuing our celebration of the one-year anniversary of Faith and Family and talking with the KFUO staff this week about their families and talking with some of their family members as well. It's been a great conversation, and we're going to continue that conversation today and maybe even into next week as well. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section and the CUW logo there. Click on that. That'll take you to their page, and you can find out all about Concordia University, Wisconsin. The listener lines will not be open today. Our program is pre-recorded today, but I hope you enjoy the conversation and learning a little bit more about the KFUO staff and their families. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Our guest for this segment is Kip Allen. He is an announcer and producer, handles a lot of production for us here at KFUO. Kip, great to have you in studio today.
You too. Good to be here, Andrew.
Thanks for being our guest today and to talk about your family and being a part of the KFUO family. Now, you've been all over the country. Is St. Louis home for you?
Well, I grew up here. I was actually born in Chicago, but I grew up here. And then I entered media when I got out of college. And as you know, in this profession, we're white-collar migrant workers. And I've traveled all over the country, gig to gig to gig.
Now, you always tell stories about your time out west. Tell us a little bit about where you were living out there and the work you were doing.
Okay, well, I wound up in California back in, I guess it was around 81 or so. Make a long story short, I had been working in New Orleans and got fired. And said, okay, now what do I do? All right. Well, I had some relatives out west. My brother lived in California. So I went out there and stayed with him briefly. Probably too long for his wife, but but it was the idea was just going to stay there temporarily until I find something else and move on with my career. 30 years later, I'm still in California. Say what? And I worked for a number of radio stations, newspapers. I did some magazine work, new media work. I spent most of my time in a tiny town, about 15 years in a tiny town called Ojai, O-J-A-I, a beautiful little place. And I worked there for a number of different places. And then I spent about 16 years down in Palm Springs in Southern California in the desert.
And your background, your strength is journalism primarily, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I actually have a master's degree in journalism from Northwestern, and I spent most of my career as a reporter, news director, news anchor, that type of thing.
Well, let's go back in time a little bit further. Let's back up even further. Tell us about some of your, this week we're talking about family traditions and some of your favorite memories, both past and present, favorite traditions, family traditions.
Well, probably the most striking tradition we have in my family is that the eldest daughter is always named Conradine.
How is that spelled?
It varied from generation to generation. The original Conradine spelled it with a K, Conradine, I-N-E, pardon me, and then switched it over to a C. My great-grandmother was Conradine Winnikin. Excuse me, I don't know why I'm coughing here. My great-grandmother was Conradine Winnikin, and the family called her Grossy. Nobody called her Conradine. My grandmother was Conradine Steger. And everybody called her Cunny. And my mother was Conradine Allen, and everybody called her Dean. I called her, yes, ma'am.
Now you did some name dropping there. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Winnikin. Is there a connection there?
Well, actually, yeah. Friedrich Winnikin is my great-great-grandfather. And people ask, you know, how did Allen come from Winnikin? Well, make a long story short. Friedrich's son, Heinrich, married my great-grandmother, Conradine Schilling. And their daughter was Conradine Winnikin, who married my grandfather, Emil Steger, who was also a pastor, by the by. And their daughter was Conradine Steger, who married Spencer Allen, who is my father. And hence, here I am. My dad, by the by, we talked about media. My dad was a media guy. In fact, he used to be the news director and chief anchor for Channel 4 here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so, also Channel 2 for a while.
So we have Lutherans and media all in the blood here.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
You ended up in the right place.
So it would seem. So it would appear.
So for our listeners who might not be familiar with the Winneken name, Friedrich, who was Winneken?
He, along with Carl Walther, mm-hmm. were the co-founders of the Missouri Synod, and Friedrich Winneken actually served as the second president of the Synod.
So you have, you were related to the second president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Guilty.
And now you work at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod International Center.
Yes, I do.
Any other traditions, anything else that that your family did when you were a child? Any other traditions? What were holidays like?
Well, because of my dad's nature, because of my dad's work as a journalist, holidays really didn't mean much to mm-hmm. us because dad was always working. As he used to say, he got every Christmas off whenever it fell on a Sunday, which is his regular day off. And so really, we would celebrate mm-hmm. at odd times because, it all depended upon dad's schedule when we got together.
So you're celebrating Christmas in March? Or?
Yeah, right. No, it was actually kind of fun because I was one of the few days I could stay up late, you see, because dad's hours were so mm-hmm. odd. Again, in this business, you work weird hours. And, dad did news mostly on television. And when I was a kid, we were living in Chicago, and he was at WGN up there. And so he did the 5 o'clock news, the 6 o'clock news, and the 10 o'clock news. Same thing I did down here. So, and he did 6 days a week.
Wow.
So I think I was like 12 before I realized I had a father.
So you grew up around media. You grew up around broadcasting, and very familiar with it. What drew you to your interest in this career?
Actually, it was an accident. It was completely an accident. I was a college dropout. At the end of my junior year, I had been an English major, mm-hmm. And as one of my advisors said, I had two choices upon graduation, teaching and suicide, neither one of which appealed to me. So I dropped out of college, and dad, who was a very wise man, said, "All right, son, you're going to work. You're not going to loaf and freeload." And my mother, who ran the hospital auxiliary at Barnes Hospital at that time, got me a job at Barnes, and I worked in the emergency room there. I was a guy asking all the stupid questions before they do anything for you. "Sir, stop bleeding on my desk." And I did that for about a year and a half, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, but boy, I got to tell you, I knew what I didn't want to do. And and so I was desperate at that point to go back to school, and so I enrolled at SIU, and just as a whim, I signed up in the mass communications course and found out I really enjoyed the heck out of it. I guess maybe because I grew up with it, I was trying to avoid really being under my dad's shadow. But I found out I really enjoyed it. It was fun. And I was actually my first gig was WSIE over in Edwardsville, Illinois. And in fact, I was one of the original sign-on people. That was, I believe it was September the 4th, 1970.
Wow, what a unique history, what an interesting history, and so we're blessed to have you here today. Speaking of blessings, one of the other things that we're sharing with one another on as part of the KFUO family is who in your family or beyond your family has been most influential when it comes to your faith.
Well, I'm going to have to point to two separate people. First of all, one was my mother. Mm-hmm. Conradine Winifred Steger Allen. My friends called her Der Feldwebel, the German Army drill sergeant. And believe me, when she died, my brother at her eulogy said, "It wasn't so much that she was a woman, she was a force of nature." And you'd had to have known my mother to appreciate that. But yeah, definitely, she was the one who raised me largely, again, because of dad's hours. Mm-hmm. And I church every Sunday, the whole thing, and I was everything I did really was my entire religious upbringing really was my mother's, and so really up through my teenage years, the Walther League was my social outlet, mm-hmm. and I really continued that up until my 20s. I will say, as happens I think with many adults, I fell away from the church for a long time. And what got me back involved in it goes back just about 3 or 4 years. I had mentioned to you off mic, I'm a widower. And my wife was very seriously ill, and I was her primary caregiver for about 2 years. And toward the end of that period, I was at my wit's end, literally. I was just, you'd have to go through it to fully understand the emotional and the spiritual burden. And I had been a member of a church out in Palm Springs, but I was not very active in it. And I was having such difficult feelings, anger mixed with guilt, and saying, my God, God cannot want this. He's going to be so disappointed in me. And so finally, out of desperation, I called the pastor there, Pastor Michael Coppersmith, Pastor Michael Coppersmith from Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Palm Springs, and just left a message on his answering machine. He wasn't in. Well, by golly, he called me back not 10 minutes later and said, normally it takes 2 weeks appointment, 2 weeks of dance time, but God tells me you need help now. Come on in and we'll talk. And he explained a lot to me. And you know how God did indeed understand what I was going through. And you know, one of my favorite sayings right now is, you know, I don't understand God, but I don't have to. He understands me. And this is something that Pastor Coppersmith taught me.
And thanks be to God for faithful people like your mom and Pastor Coppersmith to bring you the good news of Jesus, to encourage you and to sit down and listen to.
Yeah. And that's really what's so important is the listing of it, because, you know, Pastor Coppersmith didn't tell me anything I hadn't already known, but I'd forgotten it. And, oh, yeah, I remember that. And, you know, it's really, to use another biblical word, it was an epiphany. Just, my gosh, he's right. You
know, like you said, it wasn't anything new, but yet to hear it again and to be reminded of it.
And especially within those circumstances where it applied directly to my situation. And that was something that really struck me, was just how much the gospel message directly applied to me. And it really brought home the idea of the personal savior.
One of one of your main responsibilities here, you do a lot of things here at KFUO, but your biggest responsibilities is World Lutheran News Digest.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that program and what you do for World Lutheran News Digest.
Well, that program really was the brainchild of a combination of people, Gary Duncan, Buzz Ulrich, and Rod Zwanitzer. Originally had the idea of putting together a program that was basically modeled after 60 Minutes, the idea being that there's a lot of news items happening that are of interest around the world to Lutherans, not just St. Louis, Missouri Synod Lutherans, but to Lutherans all around the world. And as it so happened, I had a news background and actually put together some programs like this. And I got involved in it relatively early, shortly after I joined, KFUO. And after a few productions, Rod said, well, how do you want to go on and produce some of this? Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. Twist my arm again, you know? And this was exactly the type of things that I had been doing before. But what we're doing now is trying to get an international flavor, because we are streaming now. People can tune in to us on the internet anywhere in the world. And I know a couple of times we've gotten feedback from Africa or Australia, South America, you know, from WLN programs, and which is quite a thrill, by the by. But we'll do things, well, for example, Eric Lunsford is our is the photojournalist who is official for the Missouri Synod, and he accompanies President Harrison on trips and what have you. And he just returned from Africa, where there were everything from the opening of the new seminary in Ghana to a school for the blind in Madagascar, the Wittenberg Project up in Germany. And so these are things where we're able to cover. You know, I get Eric on the air, and he'll tell me what went on. Or we'll have Ross Johnson, who's the head of Lutheran Disaster Response, talks about the efforts to help in the Philippines in the wake of the typhoon, things like that. One thing we've been doing recently is to try to put end the broadcast a little bit on a lighthearted note. You know, news can be really depressing. And we don't want to depress our listeners. And there's also the One of the things that amuses me is that Lutherans have a reputation among non-Lutherans as being rather dour and humorless people. We've obviously not been at one of our beer blasts, but I recently discovered a group of performance artists up in Minnesota called the Looney Lutherans. These are three ladies who are marvelously funny. They do they do theater acts. They do the whole thing, song and dance routine. And I've been finishing up the broadcast lately with things like theirs, you know, like Eat Like a Lutheran, Lutheran Dancing Machine. That's one of the ones we've got. And they do takeoffs on ABBA and all sorts of different things. And it's really fun.
Well, it's nice to get to hear from Lutherans around the world and what's going on with them. I have the privilege of being a part of World Lutheran News Digest from time to time and sharing some of those stories. So it's nice to hear what's going on with our Lutheran brothers and sisters around the world.
It is. And we depend a lot on them getting information to us. You know, our staff is not large. And so we rely heavily on the internet. We search around Buzz Ulrich, who is an incredible asset to the station. For example, he stumbled across an article from the church in Brazil recently. Now, not speaking Portuguese, but realizing that perhaps maybe this is something that's interesting. He grabs the story, puts it into Google Translator, and then gets the English translation out and said, "Ooh, we can use this story for World Lutheran News Digest." You know, so that's Buzz. He's just an incredible individual.
Well, thank you very much for your time today and sharing your story with us. We appreciate you being a part of Faith and Family and being a part of the KFUO family here today.
I have enjoyed it immensely. This is where God wants me to be. And I've asked myself many times, why on earth did I ever leave St. Louis?
Thanks for being our guest today, Kip Allen.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
According to researchers, America's abortion laws make it one of the top most radical pro-abortion countries. According to the study, America allows abortion without restriction until viability, which is at least 24 weeks. However, it's been documented that late-term abortionists are regularly aborting babies until birth with no repercussions. This puts us in company with Canada, Vietnam, and the brutal dictatorial nations of China and North Korea. U.S. law makes us a radical fringe nation compared with the international mainstream. America abortion law is far to the left of Europe and other civilized nations. Most countries allow abortion for only 12 weeks. Even 1 week is barbaric. But the U.S. abortion industry makes us the worst of the worst.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and we are continuing our conversations with the KFUO family and staff this week, the staff and their families as part of the KFUO family. And joining me in studio today, the Reverend Rod Zwanitzer, Director of Broadcast Ministry here at Worldwide KFUO. Rod, good to have you in studio today.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Andy.
And who did you bring with you today?
I brought my wonderful wife, Bonnie.
Bonnie, thanks for joining us in studio today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Now, is this your first time being in the studio, being on the air with us?
Oh, yes.
Well, thank you for making Faith and Family your debut here at Worldwide KFUO.
Well, thank you.
Well, I've had a lot of fun talking with all the staff about being a part of the KFUO staff and what's been important to them in their family traditions and who has influenced them in faith. So I would love to hear that from you about what are some of your favorite traditions, whether they're passed from your childhood or traditions that you have now, or all of them. What are some of your favorite traditions? We'll start with Rod. Favorite family traditions.
Well, some of them I'd like to share. I promised Bonnie I wouldn't do public. But, you know, growing up, one of my favorite traditions to remember, and before my dad passed away some years ago, I had the chance to really thank him for this, is that we had a tradition in our family that if you were able-bodied, you need to be ready to go at a certain time, dressed and ready to go as a family to Sunday school, Bible study, and church. Mm-hmm. That wasn't an option. Even as you got older, especially into high school, where I, you know, and some of my brothers would rebel, there was no rebelling. My dad would always talk about, if you live under this roof, you're going to go as a family. And so, you know, if you told him you were sick, he would say, okay, let's get in the car and we're going to go to Dr. Barlow, who is our family physician. And if I said, which I always would, okay, I'll go to Dr. Barlow. My dad knew I was really sick because I didn't like Dr. Barlow and my dad didn't like Dr. Barlow. So, you know, when you're growing up, you're not as smart as you think you are. And so as I got older, I remembered that. And I thank my dad, because a lot of those days that I did not want to be in church, as we all know, God got through to me and mm-hmm. taught me some things that I still thank him for. And then when we would get back from church, my mom would usually have a beautiful Sunday meal for the family. And you were required to be there for the Sunday meal. And then my dad would randomly call on one of us summarize what today's sermon was about. And so a lot of times my brothers and I were trying to give each other information.
So feeding each other tips from the sermon.
Those are two of my favorite family traditions. And I remember them fondly. The other one I was going to share, and my mom still does this, I was and still am one of the family members that, since I went to college, kind of lived away from the family and out of town. And so they always told me, Rod, at between 10:30 and 11 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, your dad and I will be on your knees praying, and we will remember you in our prayers always. So always remember that. And so to this day, my mom and I talk about that. Hmm. And I tell other family and people that too. And so all my life, I remember that at a certain time, I know that my mom and dad are praying, and they're praying for me. That was very comforting.
It sounds like that because of that was also very influential, not only a fond memory, but also really shaped who you are and certainly been a part of your faith and led to where you are today.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, there's a lot of traditions that you fondly remember, but these of a spiritual nature to me, mm-hmm. as you say, are really deeply embedded, and I'm deeply grateful that God led my folks to have that kind of a spiritual life.
And even traditions that included food.
Yes.
The dinners. I when I think of those traditions, I think of the smells, you know, when you walk into a home and you were talking about that Sunday afternoon or Sunday dinner and everybody had to be there, but just you're talking about the beautiful meal that your mom prepared. And
yeah.
Sometimes when you smell that dish that you haven't smelled in years and it brings back that flood of memories. Was there a specific dish from Sunday dinner that was your favorite?
My mom she's a great chef, and her fried chicken was exceptional. Her meatloaf, didn't like her pot roast. That was one of her favorites, but not one of mine. But she just did so many. And I'm remembering too that it was more of a formal meal. Mm-hmm. You could not come sloppy. You had to sit up straight. Could not mm-hmm. put your elbows on the table. You had to, and you had to converse with each other, which, as you get into teenage years, you know, it's tough. But
sure.
that was important too. Mm-hmm. I interviewed an author on my book talk program, Andy, that was a former White House chef, Russell Cronkite, and he had a whole book on this, Returning Sunday Dinner, where he has all these menus and talks about his memories with certain dishes around the world. And, you know, that's kind of what I remember when you're talking about the smell and all that. Mm-hmm. And my mom would, as best she could, set the table differently and make it really nice. And so, and you know, now I understand the conversing part. And like with our grandkids, it's, you know, I can see the frustration of my parents, you know, the traditional teenage one-word answer, yep, nope, you know. And wanted more, we were taught to talk more than that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, Bonnie, let's hear about some of your favorite traditions, whether from childhood or new traditions that you have.
Well, I think one of a special family holiday tradition for me was Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. My brother and I both went to Lutheran grade school, and we would have the children's program or the day school program on Christmas Eve. And so we would go and go to, you know, go to church for the program. And then afterwards, we would gather over to my grandpa and grandma's house with the rest of my dad's family and all my cousins who had been to their church's programs. And we would, my dad's German, his family, and his brothers, we would gather around the piano, which was, he had a player piano and just a regular piano. Anyways, we would gather around the piano, the kids would, and listen to my dad's, there were three of them, three boys sing a lot of the Christmas hymns in German and other Christmas carols.
Sure.
And then we would all join in singing as well.
So when you hear those carols and hymns in German now, does it take you back to that?
It does. Yes, it does. Yeah, yes, a lot of fond memories.
And the three of them could really sing.
Yeah.
Yes, they had very good voices.
Great harmony.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, did you grow up in one of those families where you sing harmony as a family?
Yes, 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 yes. No, we didn't. My dad, we didn't. He didn't speak a lot of German within our family. It was like my grandfather and his brothers that would, because they came over from Germany, but they always sang in harmony. There, I don't think there was a song that they ever sang, even if they weren't on key or not, they sang it.
Well, that just sounds like a beautiful memory of Christmas and a time for you as growing up.
Mm-hmm.
What about new traditions? Do you have any new traditions now or any traditions that you carry on now as the Zwanitzer family? Anything that you...
Well, now we would on Christmas, when both my parents are deceased, and my mom was still able, we would go over... To their house for Christmas Day dinner, along with my brother and his family. But now, since my parents are deceased, we have a tradition now on Christmas Day. We go over to my niece's house, and she prepares a beautiful meal. Mm-hmm. A lot of the same dishes and desserts that my mom used to prepare.
What was your favorite one? What was your favorite dish out of that menu?
Well, I guess I always liked my mom. My mom was a very basic person, and she made, I think, a wonderful turkey dinner with all the trimmings, you know, and probably her specialty, and I still really haven't brought it home like she did, were these homemade rolls. She made wonderful rolls.
Yeah.
Butter rolls, and she was from the South, so she made a lot of Southern dishes as well.
Very good. Well, you both have shared just beautiful stories of your memories of traditions, and Rod, you've already mentioned that your parents were really key in passing on the faith, teaching you about Jesus. Were there others who were influential when it comes to your faith? Were there others?
Yeah, and easily my dad's mom, my grandmother. Her husband, my grandfather, passed away right before I was born, so I never got to see him. But my grandfather is just the most remarkable person I've ever been around. Her name was Sophia, which from the Bible means wisdom, mm-hmm. the wise one. And she was a little bitty short lady, gave birth to 12 children, and then another two were stillborn. And the last one had Down syndrome. And she promised her husband that they would never put her in a facility. So to the end of her life, Grandma took care of my Aunt Leela. And, you know, when you're young and growing up, and we live quite a distance apart, when we'd have to go see Grandma Z and Leela, my aunt, her daughter, you know, it was tough on me because I didn't know how to treat a retarded person. And we always thought she was, you know, when you're growing up and you get a little older, you among yourselves, my mom or dad would say, why don't you go hug and kiss your Aunt Leela? And, you know, we're like, do we have to? Yes, you have to. But she had just had a remarkable faith. My grandmother didn't have a lot, but she's the most, how would I phrase it? She's the most content, happy person that I've ever met in my life. She didn't have a lot. And I can remember distinctly one year, all the family sitting around and talking, and they were talking memories, you know, down memory lane, and tough years. They were farmers, and the Depression, all that. And all of a sudden, Grandma said, she, with a smile on her face, "Now you all stop that, because these are some of the best years because we were more dependent upon God." Mm. And every year, Christmas and my birthday, I received some kind of a gift from my grandmother that was Christian. And so many years it was hard on me because I wanted a baseball glove or something else, records. And I got Bible books, which I still have. I got things like that. And now I can truly see what my grandma was doing. And that means a lot to me. So easily my grandmother. As I grow older, I think of her fondly. Yeah, easily my grandma Sophie.
Bonnie, how about for you? Who is influential when it comes to faith?
Well, I'd have to say both my parents were. Mm-hmm. My dad, every night he would gather us. It was just I have a brother, and but he would gather us and we would have our family devotion every evening. Which was very special to me, and both my parents were so God-fearing and had such wonderful faith. And my mom was constantly reading the Bible to me, and just before I'd go to bed at night, they would come in and we would say our prayers together, and. I can remember before my mom passed away, she was in a nursing home for 6 years, and she was constantly witnessing to the people in the nursing home about the blood of Jesus. That's all she could talk about. Wow. And same with my dad. My dad, when he, his last few days in the nursing home, he kept, somebody would come into the room and he would tell them, "I want to go home." And they would say, "Now, Rudy, you don't want to go home. You've got to be here because we're taking care of you." He said, "No, I want to go home." And he pointed to the sky. Mm. He wanted to go home to see Jesus. So I would have to say both my parents were very, very influenced in my faith. And my faith got stronger as I got older, and then my faith really got stronger when I met Rod, and I can't thank God enough for putting the two of us together.
Tell about your mom's dream.
She prayed. Yeah, she didn't dream. She prayed. She prayed all the time, and she would tell people this all the time, that she prayed that Bonnie would meet a Lutheran pastor and get married to a Lutheran pastor. And so the Lord, it took a while, it took a few years, but before she died, her dream, you know, her prayers were answered.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
What a a joy, I'm sure, for her to see that, that prayer answered.
Yes, yes, it was. Yes.
Rod, what do you like about being part of the KFUO family? You've been with us, what, almost 2 years
now? 2 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think from the very beginning, what struck me was being a part of this family that extends back to 1924. We're coming up on the 90th year celebration. And I remember walking in that first day. It was a Saturday evening, and Joni let me in to put my stuff in the office. And then she left, and I was all alone, and I was thinking of the great people that have proclaimed the gospel of Jesus from that building since 1924. And to be in that historic stream of all those wonderful men and women is what's always touched me. You know, I was listening to an interview with Pastor Hawkinson, and he was saying it's a privilege, and I concur with that. I tend to not think of the current staff as a family so much as I think them as dear brothers and sisters in Christ. That's a team, and the wonderful team that we are, and have become and continue to become, and to see people blossom you know, one person told me early on, you've really helped me come to work every day and be excited and be happy, and that brought tears to my eyes. So you know, without the team, as I always say, we're nothing. So it's none that the more important or less important. It's kind of like the body of Christ. You know, we're all in this together to do that one thing: proclaim Jesus and him crucified for our sins. And you know, you get paid to do that too. So that's what really means a lot to me.
Good. Well, thank you both for being my guest today on Faith and Family. I've enjoyed the conversation, spending some time with you and hearing your stories. Thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family today. Thanks, Bonnie, for coming in.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
And Rod, Reverend Rod Zwanitzer, thanks for being my guest on Faith and Family today.
Our pleasure, and thanks for doing this series. I've listened to it all, and maybe we'll have to do this again. That was really a great idea, Andy.
Thanks.
I'm Missouri State Treasurer Clint Zweifel. My office has more than 100 unclaimed military medals we'd like to return to the Missouri veterans who have earned them. For a complete list of medals and to see if you have any unclaimed property, visit showmemoney.com. Help us honor our veterans for their sacrifices and help them preserve their family legacies. Go to showmemoney.com.
This message brought to you by the Unclaimed Property Division of Missouri State Treasurer Clint Zweifel.
God speaks of those who see many things, but do not observe them, and who have ears that are opened, but do not hear. Is he talking about you? On the next Law and Gospel, we will examine this text from Isaiah 42 as one of the readings for the fourth Sunday in Lent, and understand its implications for you.
Weekday mornings beginning at 9:30 on KFUO.
Have you ever missed a live broadcast of one of your favorite KFUO programs? Well, let me propose a convenient solution for you. Visit the KFUO website, kfuo.org, and download your favorite program by way of podcast to your iPhone or other smart device. It's easy, it's simple, it's convenient, and you'll never miss another program. KFUO, the official voice of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is the messenger of good news by way of radio, web, and podcast.
Anti-gay preacher Fred Phelps has died at the age of 84. The Westboro Baptist Church that Phelps founded in Topeka, Kansas, was small and unaffiliated with any denomination, but its members were nationally known for picketing at the funerals of soldiers whose deaths they blamed on America's tolerance for homosexuality. The signs his followers carried warned of God's judgment in the harshest terms, prompting laws limiting protests at funerals. But in 2011, the Supreme Court ruled that Phelps' followers were were protected by the First Amendment and could not be sued for monetary damages for inflicting pain on grieving families. Margie Phelps says in laying her father to rest,
"There will be no funeral. There will be no graveside service."
Ritual she calls idolatry, but she says the church's pickets and protests will continue.
"It's never been about any human institution. The Lord God of eternity will have his standard in this earth."
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and we are continuing our celebration of the anniversary of Faith and Family this week by talking with the KFUO families, and it's a privilege and a joy today to get to talk with my own family, my wife, Lauren, and my son, Oscar, joining us in studio today to talk about our family traditions and things that we appreciate about our family. So, good morning, honey.
Good morning.
Hey, Oscar, how are you today? Are you going to talk for everybody? He was just talking as we were getting ready to
blowing raspberries.
So we've talked with everybody else throughout the week about their family traditions and things that they like about their families. And so it's kind of funny interviewing myself, I guess, and my own wife. And I don't know if Oscar will say a whole lot today, but it's kind of fun to get to talk about the things that we like about our families. Now, our family started back in, our family came together in, 1998 was when first met at Camp Luther Haven in Albion, Indiana. So I guess we have our friends to thank there for helping us connect. So for our listeners, Lauren, you grew up in Northwest Indiana.
Yes.
So grew up as, in the Hoosier State.
Crown Point, Indiana, not too far from, about an hour from Chicago. So, yep, grew up and there my whole life.
One of your family traditions, one of your traditions from, I guess, what, middle school or high school was going to Camp Luther Haven during the summer.
Yes, it was a huge, huge blessing in my life. My dad let me go to Camp Luther Haven as much as I wanted in the summer, so it was probably nice for him, too. But I loved going. I went as a camper, starting really in, elementary school, and then as I got older, was able to do servant events, and then work as, junior counselor and counselor and worked on staff, continuing on from there. So it was awesome. Camp Luther Haven was a huge tradition in my life. I loved it.
And by going to camp, that's also where you met, where you started learning about what a director of Christian education is, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Funny enough, all through high school, trying to figure out kind of what career path I was going to take, I would come home with different ideas, and my dad was always very supportive. Oh, I think maybe I want to be a teacher, which was awesome. Or, maybe I want to be a physical therapist. And my dad was always very supportive. And I spent a summer at Camp Luther Haven and met David and Corrine Jander, who were directors of Christian education, mm-hmm. DCEs. And funny enough, my church in Hebron, Indiana, St. Michael's, was amazing, but we were a very small congregation. So I actually had no concept or idea that there was even that kind of ministry out there or that job opportunity. So I had come home from a servant event and said, "Dad, I think I want to be a DCE." And he, before I even finished describing what that was, he was like, "That is what you're supposed to do." So camp was a huge tradition and a huge part of kind of what led me to my career today. So pretty awesome.
And for me, learning about DCEs, it wasn't until I went to Concordia University in River Forest, mm-hmm. Concordia, Chicago, that I learned about what DCEs are as well. So I guess for me, it was while I was there, actually in the pre-seminary program, and I started meeting other students who were in some of my theology classes and met the directors of Christian education students there and, mm-hmm. and found out about it.
That's awesome.
And it was through my time at Concordia University that I also found out about Camp Luther Haven.
Yay!
when I was a student there, we had our spiritual life retreats at Camp Luther Haven, mm-hmm. in Indiana. And so it was, I don't remember what year it was that we went for a spiritual life retreat and found out about Camp Luther Haven. And then when recruitment came the following spring, I guess it was, following like January, February, I guess it's not really spring, but the following year, recruitment for their summer staff, I filled out the Naloma application. I marked Camp Luther Haven, mm-hmm. in Indiana as one of my choices. Ended up getting to go there as a summer staff and just having a lot of fun. That's obviously where we met. And also
learned more about DCEs through that. And so we both ended up becoming DCEs at different points in time going through the Concordia system. Now, you went to Concordia, Seward, Nebraska.
I did. Seward, Nebraska. It was such an awesome place to go to school. I'm very thankful that I was able to go there. So it was definitely a great fit for me.
And
so I loved it.
Studying there, you made a lot of friends there at Concordia, Nebraska.
Still, my friends, my closest friends today are from camp and Concordia, in fact.
And many of them actually heading into town this weekend.
Yes. Next weekend, we get to spend some time, make some new traditions with some of our great friends that we, you know, developed in over at school. And I just can't believe we're all getting together with our children now. So it's so awesome because we're all going to get together. And it's just so exciting to see each other raise each other's children in the faith, you know? Yeah.
So with the get-together this weekend, there will be how many little ones? Let's see, there will be...
Addie. We don't name them all, but there'll be like one, two, there'll be like four or five.
So a bunch of little kids. So the next generation. So we
the next
to
generation
on,
to pass on our faith.
Yeah, to pass
it's
on
exciting.
The gifts that God has given us and pass on the faith, to pass on the traditions, too.
And we've even become godparents to some of our friends' children, too. So it'll just be a really neat thing.
So God has certainly given us good gifts in our family and blessings. And little Oscar's sitting here. He's actually not talking much at all today. Usually he'll talk a little bit, so he might talk.
He's fascinated with the microphones.
Well, much like his daddy.
That's right.
I guess that's how I ended up here today is the technology side of it. Is
you talk into them, he wants to put them in his mouth.
Well, that's true. He's in that stage where he wants to eat everything that he sees.
Yeah. He says, I'm here too.
Well, for me, I think some of the traditions that I liked. there he goes. Now he's finally talking for us. For me, traditions as a child, I think some of the things that I liked about family time for my family was getting to spend like vacations camping. Mm. We didn't go on really extravagant vacations when I was a kid, but we spent a lot of time camping, whether it was in the fall and spring just doing weekend trips or during the summer where we'd go for weeks at a time. Mm. That was how my family would spend time together. And looking back now, seeing how much quality time we had together on those trips and how that has shaped what I view as quality time and how I like to spend time together with you and Oscar, mm-hmm. Having that time together as a family. Because when you're camping, you're together as a family.
Yeah.
Obviously, that was before the days of internet and all these, you know, distractions that we mm-hmm. can carry around electronic devices. We still had electronics and stuff, but and things to distract us. But for us as a family, during that time of 2 weeks together, you learn how to bear one another's burdens and endure through rainy days. Sometimes during the 2 weeks that we'd be camping, we might have 4 or 5 days of rain where we're stuck in the camper mm-hmm. and stuck in the RV and can't really get out and do much other than go play in the rain if there's no thunder or lightning.
Yeah.
Which we did that too. And I hope Oscar will have opportunities to learn about playing out in the rain when there's no thunder or lightning and splashing in puddles and all that fun stuff. What about, were there any fun things? I know you did a little bit of camping as a family.
Right, camping was actually a big part of my life, and it was actually through my godparents because my mom was a New Yorker and camping was not in her language, but she was very generous enough and, you know, aware enough to know that it was a really special thing to do. So often I would go camping with good family friends from church, and then my parents would meet us on Sunday sometimes. But I was really trying to think of really some good traditions to share because my family really grew up kind of spread across the United States in a way. Mm-hmm. My mom was from Long Island, New York. My dad was from Indiana. And so holidays and such, we would kind of switch back and forth. So, you know, so they weren't always necessarily the same. But I was trying to think of some of my favorite family traditions would actually be when we drove out to New York. And most of the time we flew, but there was times we drove. And we drove in our station wagon. And I got to sit in the back facing, you know, backwards, which I thought was the best thing. My mom was a teacher. So she always had some great activities and things for, you know, for us to do and some challenges. And one of my favorite ones was always trying to find all of the license plates for the different states.
Yeah.
Because grandma and grandpa would pay us $1 for each one we found. Probably, you know, to help my parents have peace of quiet on the way. But, you know, that was some really special memories driving out to New York. But flying was really fun too, of course. But then we would go out there for long periods of time and that's where a lot of our vacations kind of happen, just, you know, mm-hmm. being as though our family was out there.
Sure.
So we would spend a lot of time on the beach in the summers. And then over the holidays, we did have some really fun traditions too, you know, so.
That was one of my favorite pictures of you as a child, just on the beach.
Yes. Yeah, we would spend a lot of time at the beach in the summers when we would go out there, and I loved it. So that was really some special times that I loved, so.
My family did road trips. We did, when I was younger, in like, I would say in elementary school, we did elementary and maybe early junior high, middle school. We did two trips where we covered probably like 20 states or something like that. We'd gotten a van, and so we just loaded up the van, kind of like an RV, and traveled down to around the Southeast, went all the way to Florida both times. And one of those trips, we actually made it all the way down to Orlando and did some of the Orlando stuff. But kind of the same thing. It was special being able to do that long road trip together with the family and playing those games. So, you know, looking for license
really
plates and
special.
That sort of thing. And I remember my parents, too, saying, okay, now, if you do really well on this, then we'll increase your allowance by this or this so that we could have peace and quiet in the car. And those were fun trips, too. And I think holidays were fun, too. Getting together with family over the holidays were a lot of fun.
And church, too, was a huge part of all of our holiday traditions. I mean, Christmas Eve service, whether we were in New York or Indiana, it was really neat that we all went to Lutheran churches because the service was very, like, recognizable for a child. And I always thought that was really special. And so we would always do that, too, together, which I thought was awesome. So.
And you mentioned that you grew up in kind of a small congregation.
Very small, yeah.
Who would you say was probably most influential for you in your faith as a child or as a teen growing up in the congregation? Family member or maybe somebody at the congregation?
Yeah, well, definitely, of course, my mom and dad were huge in laying that foundation, but it definitely was such a blessing to have that whole congregation. Like,
Now he finally
talks saying, amen. You know, just being at a congregation like that, we had volunteers that taught Sunday school to us our entire lives, like, because they loved us and they wanted to help us grow in the faith. And so I think of Lady Pam Schultz, who was just awesome. And, you know, she worked with us from preschool till high school. And, you know, so there's people like that, definitely pastoral influences and dedication. Pastor Shum, who is actually serving in Indiana now, he was at our congregation. We were blessed to have him serve there. And he was a huge part of my faith development, too. And just kind of also like kind of opening my eyes to service, and then which led me back to Camp Luther Haven, and just kind of a circle. So, yeah, family, friends, it takes a village.
Absolutely.
A lot of people, you know, working in our lives. My godparents were awesome. So really blessed to have lots of people that knew the Lord in my life.
For me, my grandparents were very helpful in that they invited me to go to church with them. As a middle school student, a high school student, I would occasionally go spend just the weekend with my grandparents, and they were only like 15 minutes away from my parents, but it was still fun. Even as a teenager, to go stay with my grandparents. And so I knew that part of the, you know, staying with my grandparents meant getting up early on Sunday morning to go to church, no matter how late we stayed up on Saturday night, no matter how late grandma and I stayed up, you know, visiting and eating and snacking and stuff on Saturday night. Grandpa would be up at before dawn to get ready for church so that we could be there in his pew.
Oscar. And Oscar now has grandparents who love him.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're very blessed. We have great grandparents and extended family and godparents who love Oscar. And it's a blessing to be a part of this KFUO family, too, to get to tell the good news of Jesus, to tell the stories of all these families and how God has blessed our family and other families here. So thanks so much for joining us for Faith and Family today. It's been good to celebrate this one-year anniversary of Faith and Family with our families. Lauren and Oscar, thanks for coming in today.
Yes, thanks for having us. We love to be with our daddy.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.